Hey there, everybody. Thanks for coming back. If you did, if you're new to the show, this is Babs Buzz. I'm a Writers Guild agent. We're franchised for the Writers Guild. We're in Northern California. We get pitches from all around the world. And woohoo for you guys this week. Oh my gosh. First of all of you who sent in the 10 pages of comedy, thank you so, so much. For those of you that I don't comment on today, that just means you got some work to do. But trust me when I tell you, I stood up, I applauded, I sat down, and I went on to the next. Props go out to screenplay, I can't remember the title. Oh yes, it's Shadows Within for Joe Cahill. I actually did sign him for that script. I'm excited for him. It's going to need a rewrite. He knows that, but it was ready to go to a producer who was looking for something very specific. And so Joe allowed me to be his agent for that picture. So good on you, Joe. You get props. Sean gets a hat tip because Sean won the comedy contest. His 10 pages were fantastic. They were snappy. They had crackle. They had visual. They had character. They had everything you need to really get the attention of someone like me. And when you get the attention of someone like me, what makes that important, not that I'm important, but that I can translate that enthusiasm to a producer or a director or an actor and say, oh, you got to read this. These lines have to come out of your mouth, Kristen Bale. They just have to. So today we're going to talk about tone, and then we're going to have an exercise. And I don't want to forget about the exercise, so I'm going to mention that quickly in passing because Michael's really good about watching my back when we record these shows. And that's going to be about writing the opening, using the songs Werewolves of London to write the first three or four pages of that song in a movie format. And I'll explain it more later because I have my notes in front of me. But yeah, so did I give everybody props? Yes. Okay, one more thing. I am getting a call for faith-based pictures of you guys out there. If you want to do a blind side, have at it. If you want to do the one with Denzel, I can't remember the title, something to do with giants. I'm so bad. Sorry. Faith-based, and I don't care what faith. It could be Buddhism. I really don't care. Just because I'm a Christian doesn't mean you have to be. But I read everything. I read voodoo stuff, too, because I know the material very well from having read it for so many years in different formulas. But yeah, if you want to send me something, it doesn't mean I can sell it, but if you have 10 pages, but you guys, before you send me 10 pages, we're going to talk about tone today, because I think with what I saw you guys sending me, you're missing the mark, and I think I know why. You guys, for some reason, and gals, you seem to think that, and this is what I'm getting, I could be wrong, I've been wrong before, and I'm pretty sure I'll be wrong again, so don't quote me unless you have to. But what I'm seeing and hearing is you guys are not capturing the tone of your picture early on. So I'm going to read to you a couple of paragraphs from a couple of different scripts that either are clients of mine or whatever. Fade in, interior, Los Angeles, Pinefield Care Home, sixth floor, night. Stark white fluorescent lights. A young angelic nurse flits around a bedside of a wrinkled old man lost beneath his baggy hospital gown. The angelic nurse puts a cap over the nervous old man's head to cover his thin halo of hair. She brushes his cheek with the back of her hand. He leans into her touch. His eyes search for help. She pulls back her auburn hair with a practiced hand and then twists it up under her surgical cap. She washes her hands at the sink and turns off the tap with her elbow. She injects a syringe full of clear liquid into the patient's IV and strokes his cheek again. He calms. She observes his peaceful face and then leaves. Silence. That's the opening for a wonderful horror picture. Black screen. This is a period piece. Super. During World War II, 20,000 European refugees fled Shanghai. This busy port did not require papers for entry and offered a safe haven, but for the boggy metropolis, it was not prepared for the deluge of people and the hardship that followed. This is a story of the Ludwig family who fled one enemy straight into the arms of another. That's a period piece. This one's lovely. This is also a slightly period piece, but melodramatic, but lovely. Exterior, Niagara Falls, New York, late afternoon. A combination of late afternoon fog and mist from the nearby falls fills the air. A muffled roar from the falls can be heard. The relentless pound of horses' hooves do little to compete with the thunderous falls. Still, the gallop continues. A cacophony of sound grows to an almost deafening level. A horse and rider are seen in silhouette as they draw closer to the falls. They travel at a speed that would make it seem inevitable that they will plunge over the edge of the falls. Within feet of the precipice, the horse's rider pulls up on the reins. The horse rises on its hindquarters and stops short of what looked like a certain plunge into the abyss. This is a family picture. Fade in, Winter Wonderland Day. An elderly man's hand places an envelope into a feather-like hand of a woman which reads assignment in large green letters. There is a faint jingle of bells. As the petite hand takes the envelope, a silver bracelet is noticeable around her wrist and sits at the sleeve hem of her sweater. Attached to the chain is a lone charm of shiny green porcelain dotted with rubies. It's a holly, berry, and ivy leaf charm. All goes white as if a gentle snowfall has begun. Montage, children write little letters. Chubby digits hold a crayon and write the words, Dear Santa. Tiny fingers hold a pencil with great effort to print neatly, clothes for my Barbie. Small hands write in large letters with a pen, a big yellow truck with a digger. And then finally, this one is interior prison corridor day. Blackness. Mechanical gears slam home, a loud rattle as the darkness splits, pierced by blinding light. The light falls on Blank, who shields his eyes. His head cocked submissively like a cute dog, his deep brown eyes light with humor, but they shift uneasily, searching for a moral center that they have long lost. He carries a valise and wears a thin suit. Now, I did that for obvious reasons. There are words that mean things, and there are words that paint pictures. And so why is it that I chose those? And there's a couple of ing words thrown in there, which I really don't care for, but that's just me. And ly words, it actually isn't just me. When editors read, they do prefer to have an actual hard, crisp page. But I was trying to show you something with the tone of these pictures, and that is this. You have to establish tone early on, and with comedy, it's insanely difficult. How do you establish tone with comedy early on? The only way that I know of that you can do it and actually do it and get it right is you have to be funny. Now, funny is even more subjective than drama, so let me say it this way. The best way to do it right is to read scripts that are successful in the comedy genre. Ghostbusters, Caddyshack. And here's why. With comedy, there is a subtlety that is it's really tremendous that speaks to the way the actor is going to read the lines and the way the director is going to direct the scene. Comedy is usually, I mean, I'm not talking slapstick and Chevy Chase now, which is rather obvious, you know, slips on a banana peel, or the scene in French Kiss where, you know, she's hiding in the restaurant and I did not see this coming, which made it even more funny. She slams into that pastry cart. Boom. She's down. The pastry's down. The whole restaurant's looking. I mean, it was just hilarious. Honestly, I did not see that coming. And I think that's part of the element of comedy is the element of surprise. So what I noticed about you guys writing this week, pitched it. And by the way, remember, I think you're brave souls for even trying is you try too hard and everybody's trying to do Hangover. And that's nice, but it doesn't really ring. So if you're not sure if your comedy is working, what are my famous last words, Michael? Tell them, fill in the blanks, table read, because that's where you really get a sense of pace. Because sometimes the timing of comedy is all about pace. All right, so let's shift to faith-based. So what's the tone of faith-based? It can easily shift into melodramatic if you're not careful, i.e. soap opera. So what do you want to do? You want to tell as many scenes you can with subtext. That's the things that are unsaid between actors. Very often you'll read a scene, it's very on the nose. Hi, how are you? I'm fine. What's going on with your daughter? Well, she failed her math test. Oh, she did? Why? Because she was distracted with a boyfriend. Did she really? Yeah. Did you take away her cell phone? Yeah. You see how boring and ridiculous that is. Listen sometime to two people who were married maybe, or dating or something, talking maybe in a restaurant, and how they're both talking about two totally different subjects. And then write it like that. Because that's funny and it actually will get more attention. But also, it's the things that the actor doesn't say. And this is something that takes a practice eye and a practice ear to hear and see on the page. A friend of mine just told me he saw Extreme Measures, I think it's called, with Mel Gibson, the new, and I'm not talking about Mel Gibson's phone conversation. I'm talking about his movie. He said, the great thing about that story was, as you're watching the characters move through the film and you're hearing them talk, so much is unsaid, so much is brought right to the edge. Guys, don't make yourself crazy. That takes the practice ear to notice and to get down on the page. It's not easy. If it was easy, everybody would be doing it. It takes practice. It takes a measure of, you really have to be a discipline with your editing pen. You got to get rid of your babies and throw out your little flowers, you know? Because an actor entering through the door, you got nothing. But if he enters through a window, you've got a situation, right? So when you're taught that, by the way, that's from Billy Wilder. That's not me. When you're talking about getting subtext down and tone, that's one of the ways that you can make the tone of the picture very early on page one. It also, by the way, speaks to the bottom of page one, which speaks to what turns the page. This is the bottom of page one for the prison picture. The actor says, really to himself, it's a prison and an asylum. The one with the Winter Wonderland, a long sigh, he walks over to the door, gives it a gentle tap. The muted sound of jingle bells is on the doorknob. The doorknob turns. Page one for the one with Niagara Falls. It's dialogue. We're already in scene, so we'll skip that one. And let's see, the one with Shanghai. That's an interesting story, that one. That one's written by Debbie Scott. It's called Full Moon Morning. It's based on a novel I wrote. The great thing about that is it has two beginnings. It has the Gerald Ford opening, which actually happened. My client, the guy who I wrote the book about, he took a bullet for Gerald Ford. That actually happened. We have the frame flashback where he's there getting Gerald Ford's autograph, and then we have the opening without it. It works either way. But what makes it such a great page turner is both are very, very charmingly written in terms of the kid's perspective on what happened. So again, tone becomes that sort of critical element. And how do you capture tone? Glad you asked. Rodale's. I hunted for a word this week. I hunted and I hunted and I hunted, and I finally settled on granite because granite seemed to have the sheen to it and the solidness that I needed to impart in this particular pitch that I was writing. But also I used another word that seemed to work, which was gritty. One of the things I find about reading scripts over and over again is I am in awe of how people articulate things. Again, usual suspects. So somebody asked me, what are my favorite scripts? In my opinion, if you don't read these, that's fine. You all know them by heart mostly anyway. But I'm talking about tone now and how when you're writing a scene, especially if it's comedy, which is not my strength, I can spot a comedy when I read it, but I can't write them. I can't polish them the way I should. I don't have a comedy bone like you guys do. My favorite scripts, the top five, of course, would be Godfather, Ghostbusters, Usual Suspects, Sixth Sense. Then I like Dangerous Liaisons, Empire Strikes Back, Star Wars, Matrix, Mildred Pierce, Bull Durham, My Big Fat Greek Wedding, Nightmare on Elm Street, Planet of the Apes, the original, The Times of Their Lives, and Pulp Fiction. Now, those are just a handful of my favorites. Go through a scene in The Godfather and watch how the scene with Sonny, if they're standing in the front of the house and Sonny's pissed, he's always pissed. He's pissed about something, and he's talking to Robert Duvall, and Robert Duvall is talking business, and Sonny is talking revenge. And they're going back and forth and back and forth. And finally, Sonny just goes, look, you know what? If I had a wartime consigliere, I wouldn't be in this mess. Finally, Robert Duvall he's offended. Now he stops. Whatever Robert Duvall was saying was having no import. Whatever Sonny was saying has no import until he stops the conversation cold. People talk to each other all the time at each other. So as you're talking to folks and you're listening to what they say, remember your internal dialogue while you're listening to them. People who are really listening aren't processing what their answer is going to be. They're listening to the content of what the person talking to them is saying. You got to get that on the page. How do you do that? You have a table read. And I said to a couple of the folks who tried to bluff their way through the table read, they were nice enough to admit that they didn't. They said, no, Barbara, I didn't, but read it anyway. And I did. And I responded back to them, you would have caught that in a table read. If I caught the word frisky five times in one page, if you had a table read, you would have caught it too. So sometimes what we hear is a far better judge than actually what we're writing, because we get into this place. You know how it is when I'm writing a pitch. I'm in such a zone that if my secretary comes in or an intern comes in or somebody comes in and opens the door, even if the phone rings, I'm like, stop. I can't have any disruptions. When you're writing, it might be like that for you. If it's like that for you, then obviously you have to think about that, because now if there's a distraction and you're trying to get something down on the page, you're not going to capture the tone you were looking for. You'll have to start over again, or you'll have to just pause, take a break, have a drink, have some coffee, walk the dog, whatever your bailiwick is, that's what you'll have to do. And oftentimes I finally get so into writing a pitch that I don't see the forest for the trees and I have to step away from it. And then the next day it comes to me like that. Same thing with log lines. Guys, log lines. Oi, nouns plus verbs plus ani equals logline. That's it. Noun, person, place, or thing. Verb, an action word. Irony. You know what irony is. You all have jagged little pill. Okay? Irony. Nouns plus verbs plus irony equals loglines. You guys can do that, I'm sure of it. So I read a couple of scripts. They were okay. You guys are definitely on the right track. One of the things that I liked about Joe Cahill's script, Shadows Within, was that actually it showed me a funny kind of, how shall I say this? It was kind of like old No Country for Old Men without the insanity, but the sanity still came through on the page with little crackles. The script was a little redundant. He's doing his rewrites now, I hope, but it's really got something going for it. All right, let's talk about faith-based and what I'm looking for in faith-based. One of the things I found with faith-based pictures is I had a writer once, and he was a very sweet guy, very smart guy, but everything was hit him over the head, hit him over the head. Oh, my gosh. Have a little trust in the reader. You know, you don't have to do, you don't have to lay all this pipe, as Blake Snyder would say. Remember in his book, Save the Cat, he talked about laying pipe. Don't lay so much pipe. 40 minutes into Minority Report, you're like, okay, I waited 40 minutes. I got it for this. There's no payoff. I have a script that I noticed has too much pipe. We have to go back and I have to work with the writer and help him get some coverage and polish that up. But the script is quite good. It's got a lot of crackle. Hasn't gotten the best coverage. I don't care. The script is still very, very good. And it's got a lot of TV cable potential. It's not a feature by any means, but it's definitely got that TV cable feel. No one's done it before. I think that's probably one of the reasons why it's going to have that crackle and probably eventually get made. So don't lay too much pipe in your picture, right? Don't give so much background information that the person's going, okay, and when already? I want to get popcorn. I got to go to the restroom. This is ridiculous. They get the impression then that when they're sitting there, if they got up for 5 minutes and they came back, they wouldn't miss anything. All right, so don't put that on the page. The same thing with exposition. You know, you don't want the Pope in the pool. Well, you want the Pope in the pool if you're going to do exposition because that just makes sense. I'll tell you something else that was cool about this business with Shadows Within, if I could talk about, what's his name, Joe and his script. What was cool about that was I called Joe out of the blue and he was ready and responsive and gave me everything I needed with zero noise. That did not happen with another writer I worked with, and I took time with this writer. I spent hours reading the script. I spent hours giving him coverage notes, and he's hung up on a word. Now, that's fine. You're entitled to that, but I'm personally done. I'm not saying you have to be my way. I'm just telling you how I personally work. And this person, for Shadows Within, Mr. Cahill, I called him up. I'm ready. What do you need? I'll fix it. What do you need? Get the F-bombs out of there. It's done. What else? This is, people say, oh my God, you're so lucky. Wrong. Opportunity knocked. Opportunity knocked. And this person was prepared. And he didn't give me a song and a dance. I sent him the guild contract. He didn't go, well, wait a minute, you could spend $50 without my permission and then I got to write you a check. Nothing. No noise. Zero noise. That is a pro. That's the kind of people we want to work with. And that's why I was hell-bent on you guys last month reading Tales from the Script. I bet half of you haven't read it. You really need to. I heard from somebody and I didn't know this. I was so wrong, you guys. I think it's available on DVD. So if it's available on DVD, oh my gosh, then get it. Because I learned so much from that little book. I can't even tell you. I thank my client profusely. And by the way, the client who gave me this, he's doing a huge picture. I'll tell you guys about it next month if the contracts are inked. You'll be really excited. I know you'll all go see it and support it. I read the script. The script is very good. It's actually better than good. It's terrific. My client is beyond gifted. He's just one of those director writers that just knows what he's doing. I have very few clients. I'm very choosy about my clients. I keep only a handful because I want to be very involved in how the script is perceived. And when I pitch it, I want people to know how serious I am, that I would pay money to see this movie, that I think there's a huge demographic out there for people who'd see this movie. And so thus, my pitch is more sincere because I don't have a poker face. I have a hip pocket for one of my features right now. Script is, it's okay. But the people who wrote it are gems and I know it's going to get rewritten anyway and they do too. Here's the kicker. They're in no position to do the rewrites. They're going to have to hire out. Now I happen to have a writer standing by. Jason, he's one of my best he's what we call a closer. The guy will go in, he'll see what's wrong with it, he'll fix it. And he could do it on set. This is a guy who's so fast, so adroit, so nimble that when he's actually doing work, he can do it on the fly. And I think that comes from probably his acting background. You know who else is like that? Is Craig Sabin, one of my other writers. He can write on a dime. The guy can write so fast. These are wordsmiths of the first order. And I think after being an agent for 3 years, doing it full time, I can see, well, actually I've been an agent longer. I was a junior agent, but seeing these writers and how they work and hearing how they work, I have to tell you, you guys amaze me. It's all in your heads. I just wish I could shake it out and just put it on the table and just sort of organize it into neat little piles. Comedy, fantasy, you know, thriller, horror, all that stuff. I know you've got it in your head. So when you're getting me to read your pages and you're sending me faith-based, back to that, think about what I'm talking about. When I don't pontificate to the world that I'm a Christian. I usually don't tell anybody. I'm telling you guys because I'm trying to make a point. People will come up to me and say, geez, Barbara, you're so much fun. You're so funny. You're hilarious. You're sharp. You're this, you're that. You got so much passion. You got so much patience. How do you do it? I will probably tell them about my relationship with the Lord. Now, Buddhists will do that too. They'll go, oh, you know, I chant 5 times a day. I find that it saves me. You know, when I'm chanting, Namyang Renge Kyo, I'm like on my game. I'm on my square. Buddhism keeps me sharp. But you don't put that on a page. I don't say I'm in love with Christ. You don't hear people go, I'm in love with Buddha. And he's a fat guy, you know, but respectfully, I say that. I kid. But you'll hear people go, well, that's the kind of energy that helps make me stay on my game, makes me stay on my square. So now to the atheist, I have a friend who's an atheist, believes nothing. It's like, I'm going to die. I'm going to be worm food. I'm done. One of the nicest people you want to meet, gem of a person. Does it make him less of a person because he can't write a faith-based picture or doesn't want to because he doesn't believe anything? Hell no. But if you would like your testimony of Buddhism, of chanting, of Indian, I love the Indian culture. I love the whole American Indian thing. I love the music. I love the drums. I love the dancing. I love the feathers. I love the whole thing. I don't have a fetish for it. It's not all over my house. But when I hear it, it completely captivates me like most people. Same thing with Afrikaans. When I hear African stuff, oh baby, I am on it like a hooker on a $20 bill. I could listen to it. I'm completely riveted. It's so much fun. And I learn from it too. I learn about rhythm. I learn about tone. I'm not telling you to say, I love God because God did this. What I'm saying is, if you watch Blindside, you do not hear faith mentioned. You see faith in action, in the visuals, in what's transpiring on the screen. And that's what made that picture so popular, because it touched people's hearts and it made them think and it made them cry. And I'll bet you $1, it only converted maybe 10 people to God knows what, Catholicism, Christianity, doesn't matter. It touched them. And by the way, please don't say to me when you pitch me, this picture will change lives. You don't know that. Your job is to sell an instrument to a producer who can make money on it. If you want to change lives, donate your money, donate your time, write because you want to. And if you want to donate your work and your time, do it. But when I get a pitch that says, I know that my picture is going to change lives and it's going to change hearts and it's going to make people think differently the next time they step on an ant. Well, I can promise you that's not going to happen, because when I go and pitch it, it's either a good story or it isn't. I'm not going to go in there and say to the producer, oh, dude, you got to make this picture. It's going to change lives. I'll tell you a story. I pitched a guy, really nice man, but a class A PR blank blank K. He was not a nice man to me on the phone. I have that a lot, you know, by the way. I really take it on the chin from my writers. Happy to do it because I don't break. But he was mean to me on the phone and I wasn't happy about that. And when he was mean to me, he threw me off my game for a moment. And finally, he said to me, okay, enough with your BS, Babs. You tell me what movie you have in your arsenal. You give me that log line right now. You tell me what that picture is, that if I don't make that movie, my life is over as I know it. What do you say to that? I came up with the title, Brother Mozart. It's a script about a kid who has this classical bent to his skill, his musical skill, as a black kid living in the sort of the projects, and he's very talented at what he does, but he sees the fast money that, you know, rap can give him and the girls and the bling and the this and the that, and he's torn because he can rap and he's good at it and he's a likable kid and he's a smart kid on top of it. He's not a stereotype. It's just, you know, he's on his game, this kid, but he's very easily seduced. And it's what happens in that script that changes the lives of the teacher, changes the life of the girlfriend of the kid, and changes the life of the kid. Now, that was my pitch. I didn't even know what I was talking about, kids. I swear to God. After I heard, change my life as I know it, and my life will be over as I know it, forget it. I was completely intimidated. I would not let him see me sweat. No way, no how. He requested the script. He read it. I don't know what he thinks of it. And I don't care what he thinks of it. My boss, Ed Silver, handed it to me after he read it. And he said, this picture must be made. So we're out there pitching it now. All right, let's wind up for today. I hope I didn't bore you guys. I had fun. I always have fun talking to you guys. Let's talk about Werewolves of London. So you guys are getting all stuck with exposition and freaking out over exposition. I want you to write You have, here's the rules. You have to write Werewolves of London, fade in. You have to use all the words that are in the song. Michael may have the link for you for the words, for the lyrics. You have to use those words as your script somewhere in your set. I don't care how you do it. That's how you have to do it. And you can add, obviously add a few words here and there to fluff it up a little bit. But your goal is to write 3 to 4 pages, if you can swing it, of the 3-minute song. And you can go up to 10 pages if you really feel like you need exposition. But this is an exercise in learning how not to use exposition to tell your story unless you absolutely have to. I can't wait for you guys to send that to me. I really do hope you have a great month. I can't wait to talk to you again next month. And don't forget, I'm here for you through Michael, and have a great, great writing experience. Talk to you soon, kids. Bye-bye.